Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 237 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and I am joined by two lovely human beings, one of them being Michael Viers, who is a frequent guest on this show.
Once a month, baby.
Yeah, like once a month at this point. How are you today, sir?
I'm dancing for all the people who can't see me.
Yes,
so for the people listening
solely
at home,
for us.
I'm just doing this for Nick. This is our mating call.
And then we have, I think this is the second time on my show. We did Misery last year. We have Nick Richards. How are you today,
Woo!
Sir?
Woo! I am fan-frickin-tastic.
Fan-frickin-tastic.
Oh, I love you. You're good.
All right. What's the weather like? I know it's got to be cold for you in Wisconsin, but how's the weather?
No, it's like 50 degrees.
Oh, wow.
It's There's like... no snow. The most snow we got was the day after Halloween.
Wow. I remember you sending me all this.
It's colder here.
Well, yeah. Really? How's it cold? How cold is it there?
I want to say it's in the low 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, right this second, it is. Well, right now it's 43 and rainy.
Off? Oh, okay.
It's 38.
38. Oh here. My god.
But tomorrow, because this we is got now that, this the is El now Nino's. The weather show.
The El Nino.
Tomorrow it's gonna be a high of 50.
We're 63 down here in sunny fucking Florida. God.
How does that make you feel that you're only like 13 degrees off from Wisconsin?
It makes me feel good. It's not too bad. I wish it was a little cooler. Of course, right after Christmas, it's going to dip into like the 50s and 40s. So like Tuesday, it's going to be like a high of 60. And then the next day, it's a high of 58. I'm like, you couldn't be cold
cheated.
For Christmas? God.
I feel cheated. So when I was a kid, Disney Channel used to do a bunch of like Disney Channel, like original, like not like original movies, but like specials about like Disney parks and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And it used to be hosted by George Foreman and two other schmucks. I don't remember who it was. I don't remember why George Foreman, but I remember.
He was hopping grills.
Honestly, he probably was. It was Walt Disney World Inside Out. I just Googled it. If you search George Foreman in Disney World, it comes up.
I was going to say, that's probably an easy search right there.
Yeah,
it was originally hosted by comedian Scott Harriet, and then later on by J.D. Roth, Brianne Leary, and George Foreman. But I remember them doing, like, what the Disney parks are like during Christmas, and they made a big deal about, like, being in Florida during Christmas is great. We have water slides, and no one I've ever known in Florida wants to be in the water in the winter. Like, I can be because we're built different here.
Right, yeah. I went and visited my family in Arizona when I was in my mid-teens, and we jumped into the pool as soon as we got there, and it was probably 30, 40 degrees in the water. It's like, yeah, that's fine for me. I grew up in Lake Michigan.
It's normal.
A couple of October, like when I went to Florida, like back in 2018, we went to go visit a friend of ours, former house guest Dusty, or I guess it was former house guest Emma was the joke at the time. But anyway, and me and Amanda were in the water, and it was like maybe cooled off bath water. It's like, this is nice.
Right.
And Dusty's like, yeah, it's too cold. I was like, but this is like the bath water had just lost its heat, so it's still kind of nice.
Still,
whereas
still
everything
tolerable.
Is cold in Wisconsin all the time. It could be 90 degrees and the water will be like 30.
Yeah, people down here. I mean, I love the cold. I don't know. My dad's from Detroit. Maybe I got his genes. I don't know. But I love the cold, and people down here get 60 degrees and they're fucking bundling up and they've got earmuffs on and beanies. I'm like, oh my God, guys, it is
get
not
fucked.
It is not that. It's 60 degrees. Calm the fuck down. So, yeah,
we're grilling in Wisconsin. And yeah. Like when it's down to like 40,
I'm shorts like, and a t-shirt in 60, 50, 40 degree weather. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm loving this. So, yeah, I wish it was a little bit cooler, but, you know, whatever. It's Florida. I'm used to having hot Christmases, and that's what it's going to be this year, or at least lukewarm, so whatever.
Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, no. I wish it was colder. So, yeah, we are doing Rare Exports today, a movie that is conveniently on all three of our shame lists.
Yeah.
None of us have seen this movie, which is a perfect pick. I've seen a trailer. Yeah, I've seen a trailer. And this movie's 13 years old. So honestly, it's kind of surprising that none of us have seen it.
I had not heard of it.
It hadn't heard of it. Off my radar. Wow. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
It was so much on my radar that I was essentially Homer Simpson trying to meet Mr. T, where I just go, like, I'll watch it a little bit later. And I've been doing that for 13 years.
Me with Blade Runner.
Save Nick. That was supposed to be.
Oh, that's right. All right. We should do that next year.
Yes, we should.
So it's kind of perfect that none of us have seen this. I have no idea how the opinions are going to go. I have some questions. It was a very odd movie, but it was also somewhat charming. There's a lot of things.
Just human trafficking in this movie.
Yeah. A bunch of old naked dudes that I didn't need to see. Oh my God. I think you needed more old naked dudes.
Never enough old naked dudes.
There was hundreds of them. We need more naked men. Oh my God. So it's going
to
be.
The Foley art in that scene left a lot to be desired. I wanted a lot more clapping.
Yeah, they were very quiet for running in the snow, completely naked. I didn't hear any crunching, flapping, or anything. What the shit? Bunch of bullshit.
I ruined your show already.
That sack on thigh slap.
That's what we were missing from that movie. Oh my God. Yeah, so this is going to be an interesting episode. I'm sure we'll get derailed, but that's the fun part of having Michael on my show. So, It's always a pleasure to get derailed and talk about the most randomest shit. It is my favorite thing. I love it. Let's talk about... since it is the end of the year, my next episode is going to be the top 10 of the year, so I don't need to talk about what I've liked this year, but, you guys... What horror movies? We'll start with Michael. What have you seen this year that has stood out to you?
Let me change it a little bit, Nick, since I'm not trying to be mean. You watch a lot fewer movies than me.
Yeah, yep.
I'd say we start with Nick.
All right, let's start with Nick.
No, I need time to pull up my Letterboxd channel.
I'll go first then. I'll give Nick a little bit of time. Let me pull up my lists. So one thing I do that helps me out, because I used to write articles of like, or blog posts of like, here's all the movies I've watched, or my ranked movies. And I never used to keep track of them. So then I was like scouring through like Wikipedia and shit. So now I just keep a running ranking on what is it called? A Letterboxd.
Yeah, that's what I do. I keep a running top 10 for the year and change it like live as I watch new things. It's the only way.
Exactly.
It's the only way I can keep track of shit.
So according to Letterboxd.
Okay.
I searched by ranked and then I changed the genre to horror. And according to Letterboxd, I've only watched 11 new horror movies this year.
Hey, that's fine. My co-host only had watched 10, so you beat him.
Okay, there you go. Gabby will watch more than that.
Gabby's that was my co-host Corey. He had watched 10 for the year, and I was like, "Good, you made the cut."
His top 10 is all that he watched, yeah, for better or for worse.
Exactly.
All right, so I'll just go. Whether or not this counts as horror, I think it does.
Okay.
So I'm gonna fucking pick it. Godzilla Minus One was probably the best movie I saw this year.
Yeah,
solid. And I didn't think anything was gonna beat The Holdovers, which is not a horror movie; it's just a delightful fucking movie. But Godzilla Minus One, I count as a horror movie.
Yeah,
fuck off if you don't. It's a giant lizard.
Giant nuclear lizard that's fucking destroying things. That's pretty horrific if you ask me.
Yes. So that's bar none my favorite.
Okay.
Though coming at a close number fucking two, Infinity Pool.
Yes.
Blew my fucking mind, man.
Yeah, that one's a mind fuck.
Oh, it is made, Nick, to give you some reference, it is made by David Cronenberg's son, Brandon.
Okay.
Brandon Cronenberg, which sounds made up. It's like Frank Stallone. It doesn't sound real.
Right.
But my thesis statement, I was talking to a friend of mine, Jason, who's also a big Cronenberg fan. So if you've seen enough Cronenberg films, either one of you might get this. I had a theory years ago. When Amanda was in a horror class in school, and she was talking about David Cronenberg and just how uncomfortable his movies are because the way that he views sex. And right. my thesis statement is David Cronenberg doesn't understand sex. Mm-hmm. And it feels very much like an alien thing. It's just like, what is this? Whereas yes. Brandon Cronenberg's fucking slays ass. His movie is like, for everything, like, because David Cronenberg kind of treats sex as like kind of a arm's length, kind of sterile, foreign, like alien object. Brandon Cronenberg's like, how do we make this movie sexier?
I need more. He
weaponizes the sex.
Yeah, and in the unrated cut or the uncut whatever one, there's more nudity and like in sex and stuff. And I'm just like, there was already enough.
Skarsgård also uncut in that movie.
Yeah, you see. I don't know if it's his penis, but you see a penis when Mia Goth is fucking jerking him off. I was like, I didn't need to see that.
It is any movie in an R-rated cut that has a close-up of a cum shot is saying that was in the rated R cut.
Yeah, that makes a good statement. Lord. Yeah, dude, that
you might want to put a warning or something before this episode.
What trigger warning for cum shots?
I'll say when you like prepped me to like I'm going to give you the context of this movie. That is not where I thought that tangent would have parked.
Yeah, that's fair.
Trust me, I
you a little better.
I didn't either when I was watching it. I was like, this is going a weird way. Holy shit.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. I'll give a couple more.
All right.
Talk to Me, I thought was great. Great surprise of the year. Some Australian horror put out, I think that was A24. Correct?
Yeah, A24's done it again, man. I swear.
Also, like, fucking made the subwoofer in my house shake the fucking house.
Did it really?
Yes. Nice. Thanksgiving, I thought was really fucking good. I liked that a lot. And then, Evil Dead Rise and Knock at the Cabin were both really good, too. A couple other little honorable mentions. This is technically a mini series, but I'm going to count it. Swarm on Amazon Prime was really fucking good.
Oh, okay.
It's Donald Glover who from, Community in Atlanta. It's his take on doing a horror show about fandom.
Oh.
It's loosely inspired off of Beyoncé's fans.
Oh, okay.
And then this one's not a horror movie. It's not a horror movie, but it very well could be. Because the way that the lead character is treated, it's not a horror movie at all, but still, I'm going to mention it. Priscilla is a very uncomfortable watch about Elvis grooming a 16-year-old girl.
Oh boy, yeah, that's real. So, that's real life.
It's not
horror.
A horror movie, but it's a horror movie.
Yeah,
no, scarier than it's a whole other level of.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a couple like sci-fi movies that might count. Like They Clone Tyrone, but it's not a horror movie at all, but it's still worth checking.
How was that one? I'd seen it on Netflix.
It cracked my top five.
Wow. Okay.
And I just watched it yesterday.
So like top five just of any genre?
Of this year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, then I need to add that to the list to watch because I keep seeing it all over Netflix.
It had no chance. It came out Barbenheimer weekend. It had no fucking chance.
Oh, dude. Wait, did it go to theaters?
No, but still, no one was watching streaming during Barbenheimer.
That's going to go down in history as an event. Barbenheimer is like just going to be something we talk to our kids about. Like, I was there, Sonny. I was there.
We all remember where we were.
Yeah, we all remember where we were. You were either at Barbie or Oppenheimer.
Like, and then you're going to start judging people be like based on what order they saw the movies. And, you're a Barbie first, Oppenheimer second.
Mm-hmm. I was there with the 70mm print and IMAX. All right, Nick. What have you seen this year?
I am not going to have as comprehensive of a list as Michael.
It's fine. comprehensive.
But one that I saw that kind of I didn't quite know what to expect going in, and I think I enjoyed it much more than I anticipated, was The Menu.
Oh, The Menu was great.
Oh, yeah.
Was that last year or this year?
That might have been last. I saw it this year.
We're going to count it. We're going to count it because, Nick, you're a little behind, and that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
The Menu's great. I got to go to a press screening for that.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's right. I read your review of it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah, The Menu, that was a great one. Fucking Ralph Fiennes in anything he does to me, he's brilliant. Like, In Bruges is one of my favorite movies. of all time, and he's so good in that movie.
If someone would have told me that Ralph Fiennes would be somehow scarier with a nose, I wouldn't believe.
Right. It took me so long.
I'm so
to
glad you both laughed.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant.
For a second, I was like, "Is that a Harry Potter reference or a Red Dragon reference?"
And
I was like,
shit. "No."
In Red Dragon, it was somebody else that didn't have a nose.
Yes.
I love it. Well, you mentioned Thanksgiving, so let's move to some horror news here for a couple minutes. We don't have much time to kill before we do this movie. We are actually getting Thanksgiving in January. If you haven't seen Thanksgiving, what are you doing? Eli Roth's return to his fucking... it's not his return. He did...
He's been around, yeah. But this was a big one for him.
Yeah, this was a big one, mainly because, you know, we never thought we'd get this movie, and then here we are, you know, 16 years later getting the movie.
I thought it was 18.
2007 was Grindhouse, so math. 16. I can do math. Okay. But still, yeah.
Not that it matters. It's a long fucking time.
It's a long time. So, and this one actually did so well that we're getting a sequel, which, I mean... I'm excited because it's Eli Roth, and I know me and Michael, we love Eli Roth. We call ourselves Eli Roth apologists, and but like
Eli Roth and Rob Zombie, is what horror fans don't like.
Exactly. So I don't know what I mean. Like, what do you think of the sequel? I mean, do I think he can do it? Sure, but I think this one was just should have been a standalone. I just think we needed this one, and then because I mean, I don't know what are they gonna do beyond what they've already done. I don't know what they could possibly do.
I don't know. Like, let's be real. Like, Austin, me and you both, and Nick, I think you as well, we all have a love for slasher sequels because it's always like, man, let's see how they write themselves out of this corner.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I want it for the simple fact is I want the title Thanksgiving Second Helping.
Second, yeah.
Right.
You don't know stuffing yet. Yeah, that would be great. Second helping or second plate or whatever. That would be great. I'm sure they're going to do some sort of pun with it. I mean, it would be
leftovers.
No leftovers or something. They have to. I mean, come on. You can't just have something. You can't have gold like that sitting there.
Yeah, if this is called Thanksgiving 2, then I might just like. It's going to before even seeing the movie, it's going to go down like half a star.
Right. Yeah. If you don't give me some sort of pun, what are you doing? I mean, with the announcement that Eli Roth did, there was a pun in his announcement. So I'm assuming they will get their shit together and know what to do. But
unless it's like something like two thanks to giving.
Two thanks to, there we go. That's exactly what I need. That would be the ultimate fucking fuck you. So yeah, if you want to catch this on Blu-ray, DVD, maybe 4K, I'm sure what they'll do, as they always fucking do, is they'll release it on Blu-ray in January 30th to be exact, and then 3 months later they'll be like, here's a 4K, because that's what they did with Megan. I bought Megan on Blu-ray, and then they came out with a 4K and a steelbook.
They did the same thing with Violent Night.
Yeah, and Violent Night, and I'm like, stop that shit. I'm buying this stuff because I don't think you're making a 4K, and then you make me double dip, sons of bitches.
Nick, if you haven't, I'm gonna derail you for a second. Also,
do it.
If you haven't seen A Violent Night, Nick, you love David Harbour.
Yes.
Yep. It's David Harbour playing Santa Claus, and it will awaken.
Oh, yes.
It will awaken uncomfortable, sexy Santa vibes for you if they aren't already.
Yeah,
Daddy Harbour.
I wouldn't say unlocked.
Well, you got Nordic Viking David Harbour Santa Claus.
I am Saint Nick after all.
That's true. So I'm going to derail Thanksgiving for a second because tonally they're actually kind of similar.
Yeah, man, they're both set around the holidays. You got one big bad.
Aren't afraid to be funny with also take itself seriously. So Nick, put that on your short list.
Yeah, will do.
That's it's definitely since it's Christmas time. That's one I watched last year for the first time when it came out, and then I rewatched it this year. And I think you gave it 5 stars as well too, right, Michael?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, 5 stars all fucking day. So you got.
And I don't know how many of those stars are just for David Harbour. There is what's so wonderful about this movie is they take the premise of Santa Claus and just try to weave it into so many different things. So there's a point later on, it's a siege film, you know, so yeah. David Harbour as Santa Claus gets injured and he's got like a fucking gaping wound on his side. You know, theoretically he needs to wrap his wound, right? Well, what does Santa Claus do? He used fucking wrapping paper.
Yeah.
And like a bow. And I was like, yes. Yes.
And he has this whole Nordic backstory that they don't even go into that they could do a prequel on. Oh my God.
my theory on this is that there's multiple this like sub genre of like the dark militant Christmas slasher kind of vibes. I think they all come back to the movie Scrooged.
Yes.
The pitches in the beginning.
Yes.
I think it was with Lee Majors.
The reindeer died.
Like everybody saw that and went, I want to make that fucking movie. And now we're getting all of the different versions of it.
I'm going to tell them.
And I'm over here wanting Bob Goulet's Cajun Christmas.
Blah, 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 blah.
Oh man, Gabby's gonna love that little theory you have because she loves Scrooge and she loved Violent Night. I can't wait to tell her that. And she's gonna be like, "Son of a bitch, why didn't I think of that?" It's beautiful.
All right, sorry, Austin. Back to your news.
No, you're fine. We have a new horror movie from Neon. If you don't know who Neon is, they're basically like A24. They put out a whole bunch of good shit. It is called Immaculate. Sydney Sweeney will be starring in it. She is from Euphoria.
She's
really cool, and it's going to be distributed by Neon. They've done things like The Lodge, Infinity Pool, It Lives Inside. Immaculate will see Sweeney reunite with director Michael Mohan, who directed her 2021's The Voyeurs, as well as Netflix's Everything Sucks. Alongside Sweeney, the film will star White Lotus, Simona Tabasco, Alvaro Morte from Money Heist, Vendetta, Porcaroli, holy shit, and Dora Ramone from The Hand of God. Immaculate's plot is described as follows. Sweeney stars in the film as Cecilia, a woman of devout faith who is offered a fulfilling new role at an illustrious Italian convent. The synopsis describes her warm welcome to the picture-perfect Italian countryside being interrupted as it becomes clear to Cecilia that her new home harbors dark and horrifying secrets. Vague as shit, but you know, whatever.
The secrets are always dark and
horrifying. Yeah, exactly. They're always foreboding and dark and mysterious.
It's never exciting, like presents and puppies.
No. So
that'd be such a great skit. dark and foreboding and ominous horror film. And they open the door and it's just like
puppies,
a basket full of puppies.
Like, oh my god, who saw this coming?
Oh wow, yeah. So that sounds like fun. I'm a huge fan of Neon and A24, and anytime they do horror movies, I'm always there. I mean, shit, Neon made a movie about a fucking pig, and I've never ever been so attached. It's called Pig. It stars Nicolas Cage. I've never been so attached to a pig in my entire life.
And, oh, this movie's incredible.
A movie is a masterpiece. This Cage is great in that movie. I mean, he's great in everything. But
my jaw hit the floor, and I just sat there agape for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, trying
your jaw
had to fucking take a nap.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Movie was so heart wrenching. I'm like, I've never cared about a pig so much.
Never cared about truffles that much either.
Right.
I never cared about Nicolas Cage that much.
I have, but
Rage is the Cage, or Cage
He's
is the Rage.
Favorite Nick.
Oh, wow.
The extra K is for extra love.
Yeah.
Next up here, so Jordan Peele was supposed to have a movie coming out next Christmas, but it's not coming out anymore. We have no idea why. I think it has something to do with Nosferatu, because that's also coming out on the 25th, Robert Eggers' new joint. So, and it's not even a titled movie from Jordan Peele. It was untitled. The plot was being kept under wraps, as per usual with the works of Jordan Peele. But it does kind of suck, because I was really looking forward to that next year. But I don't think he wants to put, like, I mean, that would be like Barbenheimer of horror, you know, Jordan Peele and Robert Eggers, a movie on the same day. It's like, okay, well, which
one? Egg Peels.
Huh?
Egg Peels. I don't know. I was trying to mix their names together.
Oh. I was like, ooh. So, yeah, they pulled it from the December 25th, 2024 release date. It's not something that they're really announcing because no one's tied to it. No one knows anything about it. But it's like, okay, are they going to release it earlier? Are they going to release it later? I'm assuming it's probably going to be later. But at least we do have some things in the works from Jordan Peele, because Monkey Paw Productions is doing something that is untitled as well for September 27th, and he's also remaking People Under the Stairs, which I am so fucking stoked for. He's only producing, he's not directing, but regardless, Monkey Paw is involved, and usually they make very good quality films. So, and that's something I think deserves a remake, because no one's remade it. It's from like 1992 or 1993. And if anyone can do it, I think Peel's team can definitely do
that. That was the Candyman formula that worked so well.
Yeah, exactly. Nia DaCosta directed it. He produced it, and I believe he helped write it. And that Candyman was amazing. So if they can do what they did for Candyman for People Under the Stairs, I think we're in good hands here. But I mean, you know, Peel has done things like Us, Get Out, Nope. All three fucking hits, if you're asking me. So I'm sure whatever he puts out next is going to be nothing short of fantastic. And we can all look forward to at least two other things from Monkey Paw this year, which I'm excited for. I don't know if you guys are fans or if you've watched What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It is ending with season 6.
I know.
Oh,
yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. They've had a good run. I don't want them to go on for too long.
Yeah, because apparently the ratings were kind of down for season 5, but
bullshit.
But yeah, on FX at least, because most people like me are watching that shit on Hulu because I don't have fucking cable anymore.
Who's got cable?
Yeah, anymore? My parents have cable and they have a landline still. So I don't fucking know what they're doing.
So I'm guessing they're not in the What We Do in the Shadows main demographic.
Definitely not.
Based on the two things that I now know about them.
You can make some pretty fair assessments with just knowing those two things. So yeah, season 6 will be the last. But yeah, I agree. I think they've had a good run. You know, they've like every single season has been fantastic. I still need to watch. I still haven't watched 5. We've only watched 1 through 4. So I got to watch season 5. But and I'm sure they'll end it on a good note. I'd rather it end on its own momentum than just be like, oh, you know, like we're ending like spontaneously. That's my least favorite thing is when it's like, oh, this show is now done. Without knowing it was coming. So at least they have time to end the story and kind of
bummed about Hannibal being just taken away from me.
When was that? Was that recently?
That was like years ago.
Oh, I couldn't remember if they did a new one. Yeah.
All right.
I still dream about it.
I have a very, very serious question.
Okay.
Yes.
Which What We Do in the Shadows character are you?
I want to say I'm Laszlo, but I know I'm Guillermo.
I'd probably say Nandor because I'm kind of spacey like he is. I'm definitely not Laszlo because I don't have the sex drive like he does. My God, that man exudes sex. He is just one horny son of a bitch.
I'm probably the fucking neighbor.
Shawnee!
Yes! Oh, man. I'm still waiting on... They're supposed to be doing the werewolves with the werewolves from What We Do in the movie. I'm still waiting on that.
Oh my God, amazing!
Yeah, I would love to see, and I still need to see Our Flag is Death or whatever.
Oh, that show is really fucking good. I only watched the first season, but it's really so.
Good. The second season is even better.
Okay, yeah,
because so hard in the first season.
Rhys Darby is in that one, I think, too, and he's fucking hysterical. God, I love
Taika Waititi's in there doing dressed just like fucking Max from Mad Max. Really strange.
I'm just gonna say one word about season 2 so that when you see it you'll be connected to me in this moment. Mermaid.
Okay
mermaid.
When you see it, go, oh,
I'm probably gonna be watching it when I'm in Alaska, so I'll be thinking of you.
Nice.
So the series premiered in 2019, has 50 episodes to date based on the 2014 film, which was directed by Waititi and Clement. The series has been met with a great deal of critical acclaim, garnering 21 Emmy nominations over the years, which is pretty fucking interesting. Last but not least, Strangers Chapter 1, because we are getting 3 fucking Strangers movies next year. Don't know why. But I don't.
Whatever.
Am I going to see them? Absolutely. Am I running out to the theater to go see them? Probably not.
You are.
Yeah. Well, the first awesome. One, yes. Awesome. The first one, yes. Depending.
I know you're going to be running out to see it.
The first one, but it depends on how that one goes. If it's
that's fair.
But it'll be out May 17th, 2024, which doesn't really give them a lot of time to drop the other two. So unless they're going to do like May, June, July, like, I mean, they're all supposed to be coming out in 2024. So waiting till May seems very odd to do the first one, but I'm not in control of this shit. So the synopsis is the remake centers around a couple, Madeline Petsch and Froy Gutierrez, who drive cross country to begin a new life in the Pacific Northwest when their car breaks down in Venus, Oregon. They're forced to spend the night in a secluded Airbnb when they are terrorized from dusk till dawn by 3 masked strangers. I seriously can't stand all these horror movies set in Airbnbs.
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah, I've never liked Airbnbs to begin with, and all these movies that keep being set in them make me never want to stay there ever.
They do two things wrong. One, Airbnb. Two, Airbnb in Oregon. Just don't go to fucking Oregon.
In the middle of nowhere, so that's fun. That is a lot of fun. But that is all my horror news here. Let's say we move on to the IMDb roundup here. This is Rare Exports from 2010, released on December 3rd of that year in the U.S. It is rated R for some nudity and language, more like a whole bunch of nudity and language. I can't believe the sex and nudity is listed as mild. There's like 75 penises in this movie. How is this not?
They're relatively obscured.
For the most part. So mild sex and nudity, moderate violence and gore, mild profanity, no alcohol, drugs, or smoking, and moderate frightening and intense scenes. Coming in at an hour and 22 minutes, it's a very brisk, easy-to-watch movie. Listed as an adventure, fantasy, horror. I apologize for all of the names I'm about to completely slaughter.
Oh, I do not feel bad for you.
All right, so.
At this very moment.
Directed by Jalmari Helander, who also directed Sisu, which is fucking cool, because Sisu was badass.
I see that still.
It's basically John Wick in killing Nazis. It's fucking awesome. And he's like much older. He's like an old dude. Also written by the same man who also wrote Sisu. Composed by Juri Seppä, who also composed things that I didn't fucking write down. So that sentence ends right there. It's also composed by Miska Seppä, who also composed something called The Big Game. Cinematography by Mika Orisma, who also did the cinematography for Big Game. I'm not sure what that is, but everyone fucking worked on this. Edited by Kimo Tavila, who did Nothing That I Recognize. I love that the fact that the father and son in the movie are father and son in real life, because we have Oni.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for real. You have Oni Tomila as Pietieri Contio, who also was in Sisu as Schutz, and then you have Jorma Tomila as Rauna Contio, and he was in Sisu as well as Atima. Tomo Corpello as Aimo, who has 175 fucking credits, so that man is working, but he was not in Sisu or Big Game, so what the fuck. Then we've got Rauno Giovano as Pipiarian, or however you say these names. I'm so sorry. Terrible at this. He was in Big Game as Safari Pilot. And then we've got Per Christian Ellefsen as Riley, who was also in a movie called Elling as the titular Elling. Estimated budget of 1.95 million euros, grossing $4.1 million. This was filmed in Tromsø, Norway. You can watch this on Peacock and Tubi. Movies that came out around the same time, we have 127 Hours, Megamind, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. That's when I was like, wow, this movie is 13 years old. Holy shit, because I saw that I saw that in theaters. Tangled, Black Swan, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, which is the longest name I've ever fucking seen. How did they fit that on the marquee? I don't know. Tron Legacy, Little Fockers, and True Grit. I've seen two of these movies.
Seen all of those.
I still haven't seen Megamind.
That's a good year for movies.
And I've heard Little Fuckers. I've heard Megamind is amazing, but I've still never seen it. I've heard it's so good. So a lot of shit I need to see and catch up on. Specific horror moments. Actually, you know what? I only have
one interesting fact.
What's the fact?
Normally I come to your show with like, oh, this person also did X, Y, and Z.
Oh, yeah.
I don't fucking know any of these people.
That's fair.
However, I will say, this movie was distributed by a company called Oscilloscope Laboratories. Laboratories was started by Adam Yauch, for hip hop fans will know him as MCA from the Beastie Boys.
Okay,
and then I think the guy from Oscilloscope eventually one of the other guys from Oscilloscope eventually left Oscilloscope and founded A24.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I saw this. I saw the Oscilloscope, and I was like, "Ooh, I haven't seen one of these movies in quite some time."
Yeah. So MCA from the Beastie Boys is responsible, indirectly, for this movie being seen.
Interesting.
Because Adam Yauch didn't die until 2012, so he might have been a lot more involved.
Yeah, because this was 2010, yeah. So yeah, he might have been around. Let's talk about Thrill House moment. This is something you guys do on your show. I like to bring it over to my show when you guys are on. Michael, what was your Thrill House moment? The moment you were like, "Yes, I'm into this.
I was actually, I was pretty much into this from the moment the movie began, but really the moment that, like, I was like, oh fuck, this is going to be a good time. It was very early on at the beginning.
Okay.
When the guy who commissioned these diggers to, like, dig up Santa Claus, which yeah. sounds weird to say out loud. When he's like, these are the new rules. And it was like, no guns, no cursing, clean behind your ears. I'm like, oh fuck. Okay. Movie is, I love a movie that has a ridiculous fucking plot that takes itself gravely serious.
Yes.
That's fair. Yeah,
this is how I felt about this movie the whole time.
That from that point on, like when he's like, clean behind your ears, and he's like, oh, stop fucking with me. He's like, and he's like, I'm not. This is for real. I'm like, oh, I'm taking it so serious.
Okay.
So my this movie just fucking just starts. So
interesting. Okay, they're gonna have some varying opinions. I like this. Nick, your Thrill House moment. When were you in?
So I'm gonna identify two separate moments.
Oh,
that's my boy.
Especially because one of my two is so similar to Michael's, where, but it was for a very specific reason. It was around the same time where they were handing out those, the new rules. And I go, wait a minute, this is the Santa from Futurama. We're seeing the movie version of a Futurama Christmas episode, and I yes. am so in.
Yes.
So that was my first one, but then, where I went from like, oh, this is a fun ride, to, oh, this might actually be better conceptually than I gave it credit for, was when we find out that that Santa Claus, are we spoilers, right?
Yes, yes, yeah, we're going full. Yeah, you're fine. Full spoilers.
Where what they thought was Santa Claus, or what the audience assumes is Santa Claus, turns out to be an elf.
Yes.
Yeah, that was
okay. Perfect. That was
a great twist.
Yep.
That is actually mine as well, because I don't know what it was about it, but for some reason, it's not that I wasn't vibing the movie. I thought it was just fine. And then that moment happened, and I did the sit up, and I'm like, all right, we are 59 minutes into this hour.
It really hit. That was your shameless. That was your Thrill House moment. Yeah. You're like, I've only put in my name. I'm ready for this.
I'm ready. And that was 59 minutes into an hour and 22 minute movie. So I'm like, all right, here we go. Because up until that point, I'm like, I mean, it's interesting enough to keep my attention, but nothing really fascinating has happened. And then from that point on, I was like, let's go. I'm ready.
Yeah, this movie is fucking brisk. And you either have to like just go with it from the beginning or not. Like, it's so brisk that inexplicably Pietari is just like, I think Santa Claus is buried there. Why do you think that?
Yeah, what do you
Nothing
mean?
Nothing has come up to make you think that. But like, fuck it, I'm just going with it.
Yeah, I'm just, this kid knows more than he's letting on, and all of a sudden, yeah, he knows all this shit. Did you, Michael, have a specific horror moment that, because there wasn't too many, but there was a couple.
The scene that just creeped me out the most is when they're transporting Elf Claws, this was what I'm going to refer to him as, to the landing strip or whatever, and then he's just sitting there breathing against the window, staring at Pietari. I'm like, oh god, it's frightening.
Yeah, that was good.
That was a good one. Nick, what about you? Was there a specific moment of horror that you enjoyed?
Yeah, it's the same disclaimer. Like, this is, I was expecting something much gorier.
Yeah.
That I did not get, and that's not a criticism for me, it just threw me off. But the moment that kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies was when they had the elf Santa chained up in the in the butcher shop, and he was just kind of like, the chains were just creaking a little bit as he held perfectly still. And that's
just a lot of creeping dread in this movie.
Yes.
All right, my horror moment was it was all of the naked men running at the end of the movie. I was like, ah, what's happening? So horrifying. I did not need to see. I was like, okay, you see what you think of Santa's, you know, front. And I'm like, all right, whatever. But then why were all the elves naked? Where were the, who made that choice in this movie? They were like, all the elves have to be naked. You're going to see 47 dongs. I don't understand. I was so thrown off by that. I was like, I'm horrified. But no, but the Santa Claus, when he was smiling, that literally kind of made my hair kind of almost stand on end. Yeah. I was like, ooh.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that at all. And he was just creepy. His entire physique was just grotesque and creepy. So there wasn't a lot of kills either. I think there was 2 total kills. So it's either one or the other, but did you have a favorite one? Mine was Santa exploding.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be mine. Like, it's just boom. Like, that's cool.
Otherwise, that was mine, but for the sake of just naming the other one, I will say when the head rolled across the the driveway.
Yeah.
There wasn't too many kills. Favorite character? Did either one of you have a character that you liked? I know all the names are extremely hard to pronounce.
My instinct is to say Pietari because he's just such a delightful little child.
He is.
But I would say I'm going to mispronounce his name. Piparian.
Pip. Yeah, let's just call him Pip.
Let's call him Pip. Pip. I liked Pip with his fucking baller aviators, and I don't know, just.
That was the guy with the big blonde mustache.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. While he's tasked to watch this captive that they have, he's just sitting there rocking down some gingerbread cookies, or as Pitari says, gingerbreads.
Yeah, they fucking love gingerbread. Oh my god, they were horking that down.
I wanted some fucking gingerbread cookies so bad. Same. After this movie, I was having a fucking craving.
I've never craved gingerbread so bad in my life. These people are just guzzling it down. Nick, was there a character you liked?
I had the exact same 2 on my list, but I will point out a performance for each of them that really stood out for me. For Pietri, there was several moments with his father, but there was one in particular where he's like asking, like, was I a good boy? Like, he needed his dad to tell him that he'd be safe without being able to say, sorry, I brought this upon us. And the dad was so freaked out that he couldn't give him his energy. And like the dad in me was just like, actually physically bawling in that sequence.
And Austin, you mentioned that their father and son just explains their insane fucking chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. They had really great chemistry together. So
Nick, that was a great. Did you have another performance? Nick?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
For big burly mustache guy when they like go to enact the big plan, and Pip is shoved out of the hangar and then is handed those gingerbreads, and he has to go like toss them to appease the elves so he can get to the helicopter. It's all physical comedy. There's no real dialogue in the scene, and he does such a good job of like that. It goes back to the ridiculousness of the premise. Like, they took it 100% seriously that he has to throw gingerbread to these naked old men, elf zombie things. So and he fucking committed to it, and it was charming. Because
there's definitely another version of this movie, probably had it been made in America, where that would have been played for laughs. And while it's a funny sequence, they're not playing it overly broad to try to make you laugh. The fact that it's so ridiculous and it's being treated straight,
so seriously is what makes it so good. It
fucking works.
Yes.
Okay. Nice. I like that. I like those polls.
That's why
this entire
movie works.
Yes.
2 more things here. Least favorite character for me was Juuso. He was kind of a cunt kid. Not a fan of him. Kind of a dick. That was Pitari's like weird friend that he had. He was kind of a dick to him. I'm like, why are you being so mean to sweet Pitari? What's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
Mike, did you have one?
He was kind of a dude. He was kind of a doucher for a child, but you know.
Doucher.
I guess if I had to like, I guess the same as Riley, the guy who like hired them to dig up Santa Claus. Like, he's kind of a.
Oh yeah, that's kind of shady.
That was a bad move.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Nick?
Not cool, dude.
not cool. I'll go with Mullet's dad that always wore the like maroon cap.
Oh yeah.
That guy was great. Like, he was terrible, but he was great.
I didn't have a line. I don't know if either one of you had a funny line that you wanted to say. I did not have one. So if you don't,
I guess the only one I really had was just I love Pietari asking if they're having gingerbreads.
Gingerbreads, plural.
Breads, yeah. Pluralized.
I really enjoyed the dialogue in this script. The subtitles made it hard for me because I'm a slow reader. So I'm
same.
Like going back and forth. But what I really loved was Pietri's kind of diehard moment, where he zooms in on him with the crates of dynamite, and he goes, it's either me or him, and I choose Santa. Or so I'm badly paraphrasing. It might be it's me or Santa, and I choose him, or something.
Actually, there was I had to look. I'm cheating a little bit. I'm looking up the quotes.
You're fine.
On IMDb, and I don't know how I forgot about this line, but Pietari has the line. It was, the real Santa Claus was totally different. The Coca-Cola Santa is just a hoax.
Yeah, that was okay. That was a good one. Yeah, that's a great one because you're like, son of a bitch. Which is so funny because, and that's a perfect segue into talking about this Santa Claus, because this Santa Claus in this movie is more of a kind of a Krampus, you know? He punishes.
He's a fucking kaiju.
Yeah, he's huge, and he's got huge horns like Krampus, and I think that's one of my things. I was like, I wish we got to actually see what he looked like, because I felt
a little blue balled after watching this movie. It's like, you're gonna you don't even give us a glimpse other than the horns.
Yeah, that was I was like, I would have at least liked to see him break out of the ice, and right as he was breaking out, they lit all the fuses and just blew him up. But I like that he's a Santa who punishes children and eats children, apparently, and didn't see any of that. I kind of wanted to see some kids get eaten. That would have been kind of fun. But yeah, that's a completely.
You got to see kids get whipped around in a fucking helicopter. They're all just in the bags.
In the potato sacks that all went missing. Because
that was one of my favorite visual jokes in the movie.
Yeah. Just a warehouse full of potatoes.
Because the cop's like, I'm here because your potatoes went missing. He's like, no, no, no. The sacks are gone. The potatoes all still fucking. The camera zooms
and that guy's performance where when he finally takes him over there and he goes like, see?
And he had already had such a weird day. Like, they really built up that moment of like, oh God, everything's so crazy today.
And I think that's I think that's why I was not into it, because there was so much mystery for so long. Like, the hairdryer went missing, all the radiators went missing, stoves were going missing, the potato. I'm like, what? I'm like, explain this shit. And then they finally do, and you're like, okay, that was actually worth all of the not knowing what was happening, because you find out that, okay, they have gotten Santa in the ice block, and all of his elves are trying to defrost him with all of the stoves and radiators. It's like, okay, that's cool. I like the payoff there. So I think that's why with my Thrill House moment for the last 20 minutes, I was like, I'm fucking into this. This is great. Cause you get, I was thinking we weren't going to get answers, you know what I mean? To like half the stuff, but you get answers to everything. And the ending is very satisfying, especially when, you know, Pietari, he's literally going to sacrifice himself to save all the other kids. I was like, damn.
Tell my dad what I did here.
Yeah. That was so dramatic. And I'm like, oh my God, he's going to sacrifice himself.
You know, that kind of the way you described it is 100% right. And I think what's seems strange about that to me is slow burn horror isn't typically so active, right? A slow burn horror is usually long, slow shots and paced dialogue. And this was like an action movie combined with a slow burn horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tonally all over the place, and maybe that's also why I did appreciate it. Because it's also like a very brisk slow burn.
Right.
It's not even a full 90 minutes.
Yeah.
It's Spielberg.
It
feels like a Spielberg.
Younger Spielberg before he just like fuck a runtime.
Yes.
Yeah, because with credits you're looking at like an hour 15, so you're like 75 minute movie, and
it's like 82 minutes, I think.
What's that?
I think it's like 82.
It's I'm saying, but like without credits, without credits,
it's brisk.
We're talking, you know, 75, 78 minutes, and so I think it's funny that you were into it. So I guess maybe I didn't understand the humor because I just wasn't into it. But when you said your Thrill House moment was just like the first moment of all the rules, I guess that is kind of funny because I didn't even think about how ridiculous the premise actually is. They're digging up Santa. Like, why is he down there? What's going on with that? And you kind of get an answer. PTR is like, you know, someone got frozen and then they trapped him down there. So you do get like a little answer.
What I think this movie does well, that being said, this is also a thing that a lot of moviegoers will hate. This movie is perfect when it comes to big world, small window. Where you have this big fucking world, and then because they're also playing fast and loose with the rules of Santa Claus. Maybe not, like maybe this is based in more lore. I don't know, but you know they're giving us little bits and pieces of Satan Claus or whatever. And like my favorite image from the movie is like when you see like the version of Santa Claus that has like the deer head and he just holds a switch and he's kind of frumpy, like, hey guys. It's really fucking funny to me. He's just like, oh, sorry, I was gonna, you know, hit you with the switch.
Well, I don't know.
But like we see all these little things that are just giving us enough information to know what's going on. And then there's also little things too, like that aren't said, but you can really kind of like peel the onion away, layers away from, like, oh, Santa Claus has theoretically been trapped down there for a long fucking time. Mm-hmm. And I love this idea that it's kind of said, but not like necessarily explained, that once the absence of like Santa Claus kind of disappeared from the world, people started just being their own Santa Claus, because that's always the problem.
The Coca-Cola Santa.
Yeah, that's always the problem with any movie that where Santa Claus is a real character and the parents are like, Santa Claus isn't real. Well, how do you explain where these presents come from, right, Nancy? Like, and you know, you can explain it away of Christmas magic that they thought they put it there, whatever. But the idea that, oh, Santa Claus, the real Santa Claus has been gone for so long that, you know, it's kind of the story of Santa Claus where it was once a real person and people just kind of kept with the traditions. Just the real Santa Claus was a fucking nightmare monster or a robot from Neptune.
Yeah, no in between. It's been a burning question I've had this entire show here. Nick, did you have any hot takes on this one? That's always my favorite thing you do. Was there any sort of hot take you could give this movie?
I don't know that this is going to be the answer that you're looking for, but it is what I was left with on the movie.
All right.
I think one of the things, other than the Spielberg piece,
it was a beautiful connection.
I served that one up earlier. is what I think one of the things that really sold this movie to me was the setting. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons why I really loved the movie Ravenous, too.
Mm, okay.
A very similar, like, that how isolating and small windowy it is to be set in this wide open frozen mountain range. I just thought of another one with a similar setting, but
if anyone wants to hear our thoughts about Ravenous, that's season 4 episode 12.
Nice.
Like the plug. Yeah, the setting in this is absolutely gorgeous. It reminds me almost like of the Hateful Eight, because
The Thing. That same like isolating snowed in feeling.
Yeah,
I think always appeals to me, and that's one of the reasons why.
I think it's because we're from Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was very blue collar, like wrangling. That like it
just
did
a
feel
fucking reindeer butcher. Like, what the fuck?
Right, like the butchering the pit. Like, it's kind of not dissimilar from how I grew up, just with different animals.
You know? Instead of a reindeer, just deer.
Yep. So do you think that all those, they come across all those reindeer? Was that who do you think that was that killed all the, because they said it was wolves, but I don't think it was wolves.
Oh, I think it was
the elves.
The elves. Oh, they're that's hungry. Okay. That's true. That's true.
I imagine once they dug up that hole, the elves, which I assume were down there with him, came crawling out. It's like they are the first wave of demon creatures before Cthulhu gets out. Yeah.
That would have been a crazy shot, like an aerial shot of them just all climbing the sides, butt naked, getting to the surface and just running down the mountain.
See, I told you wanted more naked elves.
Damn it. Damn it, you're right. Oh my goodness. So is there
don't
any
fear what you don't understand, Austin?
You caught me. You're right. Is there anything else you guys wanted to touch on or mention before we wrap up here?
So I appreciate a bold swing on the story of a Santa Claus or some sort of, you know, creature that, or, you know, mythical being that we don't know. Like, I appreciate that. So even though I wanted a little bit more from it, I think that's not a bad thing. It left me wanting more. But we can't leave this show without talking about the human trafficking ending.
Oh, yeah. That was actually going to be my last point. Yeah.
Was that weird to you? That feels like something that's just then, like, day in, day out stuff for me.
And, like, who's paying that much for, like they barely trained them and they all kind of look like drug addicts? Like,
it was funny to
I've
me.
I've seen better Santas at the mall.
My main concern at that same exact moment, which should have been the human trafficking, was instead, wait a minute. What is their reindeer business? Like, all of a sudden, I just start worrying about, like, what do they do again?
they capture and butcher reindeer.
Yeah.
Okay.
But all the reindeer are gone now, so they're in the skin business.
But then, like, I want to know, like, are they selling the fucking Santas to the same business? Are they selling
right? Like, butchered? They'd have to open up a whole new market. Yeah. I was the this is the part of the movie where it falls apart for me. Like,
yes, same.
I want to see a P&L statement. I want to see, like, their small business loan applications. I need to make sense of their
God,
process.
There's a little thing. So when they put the new Santa Claus, I guess, in the box, I was just hoping they'd put like a little thing of, like, gingerbread in there for, like, here, this should hold you until you get to where you're going.
Nothing.
Because they're mailing people.
The training montage.
Oh my God,
was
the training
amazing.
I love that. I also love that because he's the one that didn't drop the baby. He's like, he's got it. He's got the juice.
Yeah,
the one that started
America.
Give him a hat.
One that started wondering what was in the package is like, no, it's not for you.
Yeah.
You put that back. That's for the children. How dare you? Nick, is there anything else you'd like to mention before we wrap up here, before we go to the post-review thing?
No, I think I'm good. Overall, I would say I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected. Mm-hmm. And I think it had a lot to do with it's something that we talk about on The Shameless all the time, is how what you bring into the film when you watch it the first time impacts your reaction to the film.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think I was expecting something gorier at a time when I wasn't quite in the headspace for one.
Ah.
So when I had this served up to me, it met me where I was in the moment. So, like, it was really easy for me to fall in love with it for that reason.
Okay. Perfect. That was beautiful, man.
Thank you, therapy.
That is Rare Exports from 2010.
Therapy looks good on you, Nick. I
don't know what to do with it, but I'm just not getting it cut, and
I think it looks magical.
Just having mild anxiety about it every day, but
I think it looks magical. I say you keep it.
Thank you. I guess this is the moment to say I'm the Laszlo.
Yeah. Yes. You sexy
and,
beast.
And
you.
That explains why I'm the neighbor.
Shawnee.
Who's really obsessive Ocean's 12.
Oh my goodness.
You're my good time boy.
my rotten soldier.
Oh, you guys are goofballs. I love it. That is Rare Exports from 2010. I've got some taglines here for you. This Christmas, everyone will believe in Santa Claus until he explodes. I added that last part. This holiday season, the real Santa Claus is coming to town, and be ready to believe in Santa again. Trivia, I already gave you the one thing that was there, and that was the fact that they are father and son in real life. Oh, and I have one other thing. PTRE's stuffed animal, Voop, or Vupe, translate from Finnish to English as woof. So that's fun. Goofs.
That was a frightening stuffed animal.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. Him just dragging it around.
Dragging it on like a kink leash.
Yeah, I'm good. Oh my God. No Goofs, rated 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.2 out of 5 on Letterboxd. This is certified fresh with 89% on the tomato meter and a 70% audience score. I rated this a 3.5 out of 5. If I would have gotten a little bit more from the Santa Claus and stuff, probably would have given it a 4, but 3.5 is where I'm sitting. Michael, what would you rate it, or what did you rate it?
I gave it 3.5 gingerbreads out of 5.
Oh, shit. All right, what about you, Nick?
I gave it a solid 4, oh. And if I could, I would have gone up to 4.25, but it wasn't a 4.5er for me.
Okay.
Honestly, right. The only thing stopping it from being a 4-star was I didn't love the weird CGI of Pietaria with the helicopter.
Oh,
yeah. It bugged me a little. It wasn't enough to truly ruin it, but the fact that I just never got a Santa Claus money shot.
Yeah, that's what's keeping me from
money. And then Sandy made me feel a little icky.
I think I'm still hoping for a sequel where,
oh,
you know, like it's the Friday the 13th 2 where we finally get
exports.
The villain.
More exports.
or go the Die Hard route and rarier exports.
Rarier.
Similar movies according to Letterboxd: Krampus, Fat Man, Violent Night, Silent Night, Deadly Night, and Silent Night from 2012. And similar movies according to IMDb: A Christmas Horror Story, Better Watch Out, Krampus, and Anna and the Apocalypse. Oh, and Big Game. So there you go. I know, Michael, you probably got some funny reviews.
Yep.
All right. Nick, did you get any reviews?
I did not do my homework thoroughly.
It's okay.
I got stoned instead.
That is, that is a perfectly acceptable answer.
I've got 9 of them.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm cutting you off at 5. 9.
Okay. Hey, Michael, 9. Can we be partners on this? Can I sign my name to the homework?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. How about I send you, oh, actually, I only have 8. Nick, I'm going to send you 4 of them.
Okay.
That seems fair.
It does. Well, I worked really hard on this, so I hope you all appreciate the effort I put into this.
I don't know which 4 I sent you. I just sent you 4.
At random.
Yeah. I know. So I don't know if you got the good ones or I got whatever. But we'll all do 1, and I think 4 each is good.
Yeah, I think that's what I have, too. Where to go? My first one is 3.5 stars from Zara on Letterboxd, and it says, "Me when I see Santa." Damn, bitch, you live like this?
All right, I've got 3.5 by Sean Dillon. It says, "Finnish people think Santa slavery is funny."
Oh, this one, I had to dig for a while, but I found one that goes, "This movie does pass the reverse of the Bechdel test."
Yeah, I think I sent that one to you as well.
Let's see.
Yeah, because there's not a single woman in this movie.
Oh, there's not. Oh, my God.
No.
3 stars from Wood. Okay, Santa doesn't eat one single kid in this. I know, that was kind of upset. Didn't get to eat one of them. What do you got,
this one's
Michael?
This one's 3.5 by The Fresh Beef. it says, "Okay, enough gingerbread and old naked elves for today."
I've hit my limit.
Yeah, we all say that, but I think we proved that everybody wants more naked old men.
We did.
Nick, I think
prove
one
it.
Of the reviews I sent you is just 2 emojis, which makes it especially funny.
I'm not there yet. Right now, I have a 0.5-star rating from Nolan. "Some dumb kid and his dumb redneck dad saved the world from Santa Claus because of vague reasons. Also, one kid has a mullet."
Let's see here. 4 stars from Tenton Quarantino. Nice. This is where it doesn't make any sense. "A weak third act almost brings down an otherwise great movie, but it's nevertheless unique and highly enjoyable." The third act was the best fucking part.
You know what? This reminds me, I'm going to shamelessly self-promote only because this is the exact reaction that I got to my film Normal.
Okay.
The point, Michael will know, the point they go from their like road trip comedy to like sci-fi portal film, either is the moment that everyone becomes interested or they're like, "What the fuck, I'm out."
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Michael.
finally, this one's by Matt J. 4 stars and a heart. Finally, ooh, a film that isn't afraid to tell the real story of Christmas. Never mind all this nonsense about Rudolph, Frosty, or the birth of Jesus.
Another half star from Lime. Christmas, but for human traffickers.
Yeah.
All right, my last one. 5 stars from Naughty, a.k.a. Julie Norwood. Nothing says Christmas like hundreds of naked elves running as a herd on the frozen tundra in sub-zero weather. And I have to agree.
That's just a polar plunge in Wisconsin.
I knew it made me miss home.
Yeah, it's going to get weird when you come visit here, Austin.
Oh, I can't wait.
One is by Charlie Smith. He gave it 3 stars. No heart. It's 2 parts. The first part, this film reminds you that Santa is an anagram of Satan. And then it says, thoroughly enjoyed this. It's a creepy yet whimsical tale that has a lot of imagination with a morbidly merry feel to it. I always enjoy when fairy tales are truly dark. It adds such a fun twist to them, as well as delivering some warming moments. It's not without fault, though, as it has pacing issues, and the final payoff feels lopsided as it abandons the hushed tones it was building throughout for a silly climax.
Oh.
So that's actually like a real review, but I mostly grabbed it because that first line.
That first line's great.
Well, to perfectly balance that, yet another half-star review from Maddie Bonner Sims. That is Santa emoji, eggplant emoji.
Perfect. Beautiful. You know,
the whole human trafficking thing, I think the way that I kind of totally missed the significance of that is the same way that I enjoy the Family Stone movie, where I completely glaze over the fact that they end up couple swapping. Like, that really bothered a lot of people, and I'm like, oh, that's romantic. And this has human trafficking in it. And I'm like, okay, it all worked out really nicely.
Everything works out for everybody in the end.
It was technically elf trafficking.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. And if anyone wants to hear our thoughts on Family Stone and Black Christmas, it's season 1, episode 3 of The Shameless Picture Show, our first Christmas episode.
Well, speaking of The Shameless, where can everyone find your podcast, Michael Byers?
Well, you can find the podcast, The Shameless Picture Show, on everywhere you listen to podcasts. So that's Spotify, that's Apple Podcast, whatever the fuck they call themselves now. I think we're on Google Play still. I don't have a way to check that. We're on Spotify. I haven't said that. We're on Audible, weirdly enough. We're on Amazon.
Stitcher.
Actually, I think Stitcher's no more.
Oh.
I think Stitcher went away.
As of like a month or two?
I think very recently.
Okay, wow.
But we can also find us at our podcast network of Cinepunks. That's CINEPUNX. Cinepunks. .com is a place for movies, punk music, and friendship.
Oh,
and boys with feelings.
Yeah, there's a lot of us there. We have a whole, there's a whole Cinepunks Discord server, and there's a whole just, you know, serious shit page where we just all share our feelings about what's going on in life.
Nice. Wholesome. Yeah. Wholesome. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast, or email us stayspooky@outlook.com. You can also follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. Michael is Viers 10 2008, and Nick is
not on social media.
Oh, I thought
you're on Letterboxd.
You're on Letterboxd.
Oh, I am. Probably under Nick Richard something. You can find me on Michael's friend and Austin's.
I'm pretty much Michael's secretary, and if you want Nick on your show, there is a finder's fee that you need to pay directly to me.
Oh my goodness. This wraps up your A Very Modern Horror Christmas month. Next episode is going to be our top 10 of 2023, where I go over my top 10 new finds, top 10 honorable mentions, and my top of the year, along with Corey, Spencer, and Gabby. So until next week, stay tuned and stay spooky.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
You filthy animals.